Seth Rollins reclaims the Universal Championship from Brock Lesnar in very convincing fashion. What signal does this send to WWE fans? Your full SummerSlam review starts right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
This is your SummerSlam 2019 review of the WWE Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me on this Monday, August 12th, 2019. Thank you guys for joining me. I know that this is getting to you late. Don't forget, I am on California time. I'm in San Diego for work. So as I record this, it's actually about 8 o'clock in the evening, which means it's 11 o'clock if you're on the East Coast. So just bear with me on this week of scheduled WWE podcast shows. I'm going to be bringing you the review show today, and then the Raw review tomorrow, and the SmackDown Live review on Wednesday. So you're going to still get a triple dose of audio. I know I normally do four, but it's just not feasible with the amount of traveling I'm doing. And boy, oh boy, jet lag is a thing, man. Jet lag is a thing. It's rough. I hear people talk about it all the time until you experience it. I know 3 hours isn't crazy, but you know, when you live your life years at a time of, you know, at a certain time zone, and you're just not used to deviating from that other than the daylight savings, yeah, it messes with you. So I am running on fumes as we speak after being in a plane for about 7 hours today and everything that goes with that. But I'm here, and I'm here to talk WWE for you guys, to get my thoughts to you on SummerSlam. And at the open of the show, you guys heard me talking about how WWE made a clear direction turn with Seth Rollins, or at least, as WWE likes to label it, a statement. Everything's a freaking statement or a message. You guys know that if you've heard this show before, I mean, that's just WWE's language. It's their corporate lingo. Everything is a message, or they're sending a statement. Get a thesaurus, please, and come up with something else. Nonetheless, that's exactly what WWE did this past Sunday, last night, with Seth Rollins defeating Brock Lesnar soundly. No kick below the belt, no funny business. You could say that what they did was a little bit above the rules. Sure, I guess, you know, you could say that. But you know, Seth didn't use a chair. Did he put Brock through a table? Yes, but that has just always been the leniency rule when it comes to, you know, typical wrestling matches that have rules. Even if it's a no disqualification match, putting someone through the announce table is apparently within that rule, that construct of a quote normal match. So I enjoyed that match. I really did. I thought it was light years above their WrestleMania match. So we're going to get to that. The Fiend debuting, the non-finish that was the Randy Orton Kofi Kingston WWE Championship match that really angered the crowd there in Toronto. Trish overachieving with her match with Charlotte. And we'll get to that too. Ricochet and AJ Styles. That was a crazy ending. Just so much to get to. But first, I just want to let you guys know, if you love this show and you want to support the show, all you have to do is click on the Support the Show tab on the website at wwepodcast.com. And if you do any shopping on Amazon, if you click on the Support the Show tab of the website, you'll see an Amazon banner. If you click on the banner, it brings you to Amazon, and anything you buy will be a small commission of that will be thrown back to the show, and it's a great way to show your support. Thank you to everybody who's done that already. You can also go to patreon.com/WWE podcast if you want an ad-free version of every single show. That is available to you on patreon.com. Okay, let's jump into SummerSlam. And I'm going to start right at the end of the show. And that was Brock Lesnar facing Seth Rollins for the Universal Championship. a match that I don't think many of us expected. While many of us expected the outcome to possibly be Seth overcoming, I think the style in which he did it was a little bit off the rails in terms of the physicality that he delivered to Brock. It wasn't just a quick, you know, fluke type of victory where he gets a cheap shot in like he did at WrestleMania with a low blow, three stomps, and goodnight the lights. This was a match that had a goal in mind. That's the difference. This match had a goal in mind of solidifying Seth Rollins as the guy. So when I talk about the message or statement that WWE is trying to make, this is a clear statement by WWE that they are going to be putting the weight of the company squarely on the shoulders of Seth Rollins. That is exactly the message that they were conveying to us last night. Brock Lesnar was defeated soundly, not easily, but what I mean soundly is that there were no shenanigans. There was no third-party interfering, no Paul Heyman interference, no bad referee call, nothing. There was no low blow. It was straight up man-to-man, Seth. And what did I tell you guys? What did I tell you, if you listen to my show, that WWE would call Seth's, whether he won or lost, a gutsy performance by Seth Rollins? Everything that that Seth Rollins does is just a gutsy performance. Same with Roman Reigns. I guess that's just the phrasing that Michael Cole is instructed, or maybe it's from his own volition, the phrase of the year, I guess, to use whenever a babyface overcomes or maybe just falls short. And it's a gutsy performance. Everything gutsy. Well, we got the gutsy move and the gutsy performance from Seth Rollins last night defeating Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship, a match that I actually believe Seth Rollins would lose. I believe that Seth Rollins would lose because Vince McMahon is enamored with Brock Lesnar. And the Brock Lesnar that is the beast incarnate, the Brock Lesnar that has the alpha male personality that Vince McMahon is oh so obsessed with, just everything about it screamed that Brock Lesnar was retaining this, at least during my predictions that I had last week. And I don't back down from those predictions because I believe that they were correct the way that I was framing them. I'm standing by it. I don't regret picking it because just as easily as Seth won last night, he could have lost to Brock Lesnar and you would have had another Brock Lesnar is unbeatable. Seth Rollins has a viable out because, you know, he has injured ribs. Which, by the way, folks, if you have ever experienced broken ribs, you would not be able to perform 95% of the moves that Seth Rollins did last night. I'll just say that. So let's all take our belief, suspend it, and then throw it out the window for that. Anyway, but it was a physical match. It was a match that Brock Lesnar actually seemed to be putting some effort into. A match that, you know, he sold pretty well for Seth. I did sense that. The frog splashes that he did on Brock on the announce table and then inside the ring were well done. Again, not exactly believable considering, you know, he had broken ribs, whatever it may be. But Brock kicking out of the stomp made sense. He's Brock freaking Lesnar. You need to have him kick out of finishes. And it's SummerSlam, so as much as I complain about everything, about matches where people kick out of finishes, men and women, it made sense here. It made sense here, and this was a total message. It was a message sent by WWE to the fans. Here's our guy. Here's where we're going with. And I expect Brock Lesnar, I really do. I know I've said this, but I expect Brock Lesnar to kind of fade away for a while. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see Brock Lesnar again until Royal Rumble or maybe Survivor Series. And if you guys, by the way, saw that quick promo promoting their WWE network with all the pay-per-views of the year, if you noticed, I mean, Clash of Champions is next. We know that. And then, I don't know, I think it's like Hell in a Cell, TLC, and then Survivor Series. They actually had the balls to say that the one night a year when SmackDown and Live go head-to-head. SmackDown and Raw go head-to-head, rather. Now, I have no problem if WWE promotes Survivor Series as the pay-per-view where SmackDown and Raw superstars go head-to-head. Sure, that's fine because it's factually true that you have SmackDown and Raw superstars going head-to-head. My problem with this is if they do the marketing slogan of the one night a year when the entire brand split has been broken down, when it happens at WrestleMania, it happens on a regular basis that SmackDown and Live and Raw goes head-to-head, on top of the fact that who cares? Nothing's on the line. Nothing. So, we'll get to that pay-per-view in a few months, but as far as SummerSlam goes, I really enjoyed Brock and Seth more than I thought I would. I had a feeling, a fear, that it was going to follow suit in the Goldberg-Ziggler match, in which it was just, you know, a couple of moves, and, you know, the match is over, and I was fearful of that, but we didn't get that, and I was glad, so... look, Seth Rollins is ultra talented. I would like to see an alternate version of Seth, not heel necessarily, although I do think he's a very good heel, but more of the real Seth Rollins, the one that people are going to be able to connect to. The one that we saw when after Brock Lesnar beat him down and he said on the mic afterwards that this is all he has, this is all he knows. That felt real. And another example is at the pay-per-view where him and Becky Lynch teamed against Corbin and Lacey Evans. And after Corbin gave Becky Lynch the end of days, he snapped to a new level that we haven't seen. So we've seen flashes of a new Seth on the mic. We've seen flashes of a new Seth in the ring. And we just haven't got that evolution of Seth Rollins yet. It's just kind of status quo. And I think in order for Seth to find long-term success as a babyface, if that's the plan, he needs to connect with the fans on that next level. And I just don't think that he's there yet. As good as he is in the ring, there's been damage done to his character, and Becky's for that matter, teaming them up together. I mean, but there's, you know, not all hope is lost, of course. Seth Rollins has the ability to bounce back. I think he will bounce back. And he'll find that connection with the fans that is just missing, that organic feel of the fans saying, yeah, this is our guy. So, again, to recap that match, very well done. I loved it. I wouldn't rate it an A. I would say B+. I would say so. It was very good. A very good match. And it was exactly the message that WWE needed to deliver to fans. I'll get it out. See, I told you guys I'm tired. The exact message that WWE needed to deliver to fans if they were to say, hey, we're going to go with Seth. Okay, well, show us. Well, last night they did. All right, well, moving on here to, you know, I'm going to start with, let's see. I'm not going to go backwards. I'm just going to kind of go with what I feel. Goldberg and Ziggler. Not much to honestly say here. It was what Goldberg needed to be for Goldberg's character. To try to erase the minds and memories of fans from the last time that we saw Goldberg in the ring with The Undertaker at the Saudi Arabia event. Everybody needed to forget that and forget it in a very quick fashion. So I understand why Goldberg was there. And honestly, and people are saying, oh, he's just going to bury Ziggler. But Ziggler isn't exactly the guy that you would say WWE is focused on for the future. Let's be straight with each other. Ziggler's a guy that's a utility guy. He's a gatekeeper. He can work with anybody. Apparently, he's beloved backstage because he can make anybody look good. He can work with anyone, which is exactly the perfect opponent for Goldberg. So Goldberg came in, literally did two moves. Count them, two. I'm not saying number, I'm saying variety of moves. Two. That's right, two. I understand that he's a very limited inside the ring, and he's making John Cena look like, you know, Dean Malenko with the amount of moves that he has. So Goldberg comes out and gets super kick, which was a nice change to the pacing of the match and timing of the match and unexpectedness. You might, oh my God, Ziggler could pull this off, and he quickly covers and hits it again, and then ends up, okay, here we go with the spears. I mean, you knew that was it. You knew when Goldberg hit it, it was game over, and that's exactly what it was. It was game, set, match, and Ziggler ended up getting the jackhammer for the loss, running his mouth two more times, where Goldberg comes out two more times to spear him into oblivion. And just like Dolph's career, which already lives in oblivion, he just continued to punt it out into the universe, into like an oblivion's oblivion. So that's where Ziggler's career is. I mean, that's where it lives. So when people are saying, oh, he's going to bury him, he's already been buried. He's already been there. That is nothing new for Ziggler's character. So this is not an up-and-coming star. This is a guy that you've been conditioned not to care about his wins and losses because he ultimately loses the match. So that is just the rule and law of the jungle when it comes to Dolph Ziggler. He loses the match. So did it do anything for Goldberg? I mean, I guess it made me forget the last time I saw Goldberg. We'll never forget how terrible the match was with Undertaker. But it's always, what have you done for me lately? And that's the Goldberg that we're all supposed to remember, is the two moves of doom instead of John Cena's infamous five moves of doom. So it was beneficial for Goldberg in a small sense of getting the fans to try to forget the disaster. And it meant really nothing to Ziggler. I would say it didn't do anything. I don't think it hurt him, nor do I think it helped him, because it was a squash. Many feared it was going to be a squash, but did you really expect anything different? And you think Ziggler's going to come out on SmackDown Live and still run his mouth? Absolutely. He'll get his heat back. Ziggler's decent on the mic. Outside of his screaming, he's decent. So I think you will get a heated Ziggler, which will make you want to see would the latest babyface come out and, you know, put a beating on him, and he'll lose that match too. That's just Ziggler's career. All right, let's move down the line here, and I want to talk about The Fiend. It was very late in the show that we got this. Finn Balor versus The Fiend. And I didn't know what to expect in-ring debut-wise. I really didn't. I was fearful that they would mess it up. I was fearful that they wouldn't present him correctly. They'd have some bad music. It would be too hokey. And first of all, I'm glad that Finn Balor stayed, you know, Clark Kent, not Superman, and didn't transform into the demon. Yay. Makes sense. Many people across the board expected Finn Balor to lose. And yes, that was the right move, and that's what we got. So The Fiend comes out to his remixed, darker, even darker version of what he had done when he was just Bray Wyatt. And I enjoyed that because it wasn't like he had completely transformed into this totally new character. It's like a link to the old character, which makes sense if you're trying to make a character evolve and not repackage necessarily. This is about the evolution of the Bray Wyatt character. Smart. That's the connection. Along with the lantern that was designed as the... It's supposed to be the head of Bray Wyatt himself carrying his own head, as if he is just showing you that the old version of him is dead. I think that's the symbolic interpretation of that, is that he is carrying the head of his old former self. And very cool, very creepy. The way the mouth is kind of hung open, it looks kind of like the Scream mask. For those of you that are Scream fans, the movie Scream. It's creepy. I think the eyes are sewn shut. I mean, it's for PG, it's pretty edgy and scary. Like, I'm 34, and I was like, oh, ooh, I wouldn't want that in my bedroom. Like, I'd freak out. I'm 34. Okay, so I don't know what that says about me, or whether it's just a good job on the creative end and Bray's end and production, all everybody involved. So it was well done. The music is a nice remix of like kind of a darker rock version of it. And then having Finn get little offense in, you know, you don't want to completely squash him, but it couldn't be anything that was back and forth. I like this. You don't always need people, and I've said this before too, that you don't need to have people taking everybody to the limit. Everybody takes everybody to the limit, which means you're all on the same plane. Anybody can beat anybody on any given day. No. This needs to be a hierarchical system, and that's what we got, at least in a small version of it, in this match, where it was, I would say, 75-80% Bray Wyatt offense. And Finn did show some fight, and you know, I'm fine with that. I'm fine. It doesn't need to be the equivalent of Bray coming out and just squashing the local talent to no names or whatever. This is Finn Balor, who in his own right needs a revamp, needs a reboot, a reset, a repackage. He needs to take time off, which is apparently what was scheduled anyway, which I'm fine with. But Finn needs a reboot in a huge way, and it's a perfect opportunity. This could be a blessing in disguise for Finn. People won't remember if he comes back and he's on fire and he captures a championship or becomes a, you know, Universal Championship contender. People won't necessarily remember this terrible losing streak, really the misbooking of Finn Balor for months now. I mean, when he was Intercontinental Champion, he was all but forgotten. I mean, it was not great, not good at all. So this could be good for all parties involved. Take a few months off, whatever it may be, and come back. It will make people want to see you. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. That is true across the board always. And so it's also a good opportunity to rethink your character. Tweak it. Add something. Don't just return to the same music with the same entrance and the same movements and the same moveset. It's all about evolution. Evolving your characters. Evolving your movesets. Evolving your promos. That's what needs to happen here. So that, I think, will be good for Finn. It'll be good for WWE and fans. So, but as far as the match itself goes, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was exactly what it needed to be. It also established a couple of things. It established the Fiend having more than one finishing maneuver. It's not just Sister Abigail, which has turned it more into a signature move rather than a finishing maneuver. And he has the Mandible Claw, which he uses, and I like. Yes, it's a direct pull from Mankind. I don't care. Mankind hasn't been an active character in what? 15 years? 20 years? It's fine. I'm fine with it. He attacked Mick Foley with his own Mandible Claw. That was never followed up on, which was kind of weird. Same goes for Kurt Angle. No one followed up on any of those Legends attacks. Not that I want to see Bray Wyatt in a match with either of them, because that would make no sense, but there's just no follow-up. There's no anything. It's just, oh, he attacked those two legends. Really? There's just nothing? I mean, it's just, if you're going to do it, own it. You know, maximize your decision. Instead, it's just it's like hot-shotting. What's the purpose? And the other thing I wanted to say that it established last night, Bray Wyatt, the Fiend, is a babyface. Now, ironically, what WWE needs to do to keep him babyface and hot, this may sound bizarre, is not turn him babyface. Yes, I said that correctly. Bray Wyatt, who's booked as a heel, and the fans are cheering, don't turn him babyface in order to get him have him be successful as a babyface. You don't turn him babyface. Now, again, what I'm trying to say is WWE, when they know that the fans are behind somebody and they are go, okay, yeah, we agree, let's turn them, even though we, you know, they're a heel and you guys are cheering them, let's turn them babyface and give you the full reason to cheer them. Well, guess what happens when they do that? It's suddenly like, you know, when you're 14 and your dad is listening to the same music you are, it becomes uncool. It's like WWE and the corporate suits and management have this butting of heads with fans. And when suddenly they get sense that they're behind that individual or individuals as baby faces, suddenly it's not cool anymore. On top of the fact, and I think this is a bigger factor, is that WWE does not know how to successfully promote a baby face for a huge run. And it's been shown over and look at Becky Lynch. You can't tell me she felt cooler as a heel when she was booked as a heel and she was getting the monster babyface reactions. And I think part of it is in rebellion to WWE when the fans can feel that they can congregate and as a unit be able to change the direction of WWE creative. It empowers them. It empowers the fan base to do that. So when they turn them babyface, it's like, oh, well, mission accomplished. Well, who's next? Right? It's that sense of empowerment. So there's also that. So it's a variety of factors. So what I would do if I were WWE, leave them the hell alone. Because you are, if you're trying to get him booed, it's not going to happen. So if you're trying to get him as a traditional heel being booed, good luck. I've said that since day one. Bray Wyatt will not be booed. He's just too damn cool, creepy, and unique. And believable. Yeah, it's not going to happen. Look at what they've tried to do there. Clearly trying to get, negative reaction towards him. Trying to get heat on him. It's not going to happen. It's not working. It hasn't worked yet. So you could keep trying, but ultimately I think the entrance is too cool. The fans feel a connection with the Firefly Funhouse that ran for months and people loved it. And Bray Wyatt has been a heel almost his entire career. There's just too many limiting factors and restricting factors and walls that are up for the fans to cheer, to boo Bray Wyatt, the Fiend. Ain't going to happen. Not going to happen. So I expect if Finn Balor is going away, that tonight on Raw, as I speak to you guys, it is actually Raw has concluded. But I'm expecting on Monday Night Raw a direction for Bray Wyatt. If Finn Balor has indeed gone off into the sunset for a while, Bray Wyatt's going to need a new dance partner. So who is that? I'm sure you may probably already know the answer. But again, I'm recording this prior to watching any Monday Night Raw. So, all right, let's move on down the line here. And let's get to Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch and Natalya. I thought this was a solid match. I enjoyed the match as a whole, too. I really did. I don't have a ton to complain about on this SummerSlam. That's saying something for the last few pay-per-views WWE's had. So we had Natalya and Becky Lynch again as in a submission match, which their finishers are submissions. So again, it's a silly little marketing scheme that WWE tried to pull there. But it was a submission match in which they both used their own finishing maneuvers to apply their own finishing holds and. Oh my God, is Natalya going to tap to the sharpshooter and is Becky going to tap to the disarmer? How humiliating would that be, right? And they're not going to tap to their own finishing maneuver, but Becky Lynch ends up tapping out Natalya for the win in a very solid match, in a, I think, memorable one. I think it got Becky back on track. Becky, who was kind of flailing out there and reeling from her recent bookings and other nonsensical stuff going on and her arrogance that is starting to wear thin. And amazingly, she did not get overwhelmingly booed in Toronto, which was very surprising to me, considering that Natalya is a fellow Canadian and we've had our run with Becky Lynch. It feels like the run with Becky Lynch is coming to a close very soon. I feel like the Becky Lynch story is ending very, very soon. Could happen as soon as Clash of Champions on September 15th. So we've had our fun. Let's let Becky chase someone down, okay? And then we'll come back full circle, but it's just time, I think, for Becky to just hand that championship over to somebody else, somebody new, let them run with it. Especially if you don't want to have the fans start to resent her for her arrogance and for holding the belt for too long. I know that she's the face of 2K20. I get all that. But it's just something to consider as WWE moves further away and further away and further away from that WrestleMania main event. Again, do I think it's going to happen at Clash of Champions? I don't know. I don't know. And again, I don't even know who they would put in place of Becky for having to have her chase. Maybe they call up Shayna Baszler, right? I mean, there are NXT call-ups that are just waiting in the wings. Maybe you just give the women's division a little bit of a refresh, just like they did when it needed it a couple of years ago. You brought call-ups into the fold. You just added a couple new faces. It doesn't need to be a mass, you know, mass exodus from NXT. It just needs to have a few key faces brought to SmackDown and brought to Raw. I think that would be a world of difference for fans and for the television and everything else in terms of just storylines and being able to say, hey, you know, look, WWE hears us. This may be the time to actually say, yeah, we need new matchups. And I've said this on my show that the fact that WWE doesn't provide new matchups all the time is not the problem. But it doesn't hurt when it's needed. This time, I think it's needed to just refresh the women's division. Okay, moving down the line here. In the other women's match, we had Bayley defending against Ember Moon. And, oh boy. So, Bayley retains with a Bayley to belly off the second rope. I think that was a good spot. It was good looking. It made sense. I just sense just that Bayley's momentum and Ember Moon's lack of reaction is alarming. And I know that many people fight with me on Twitter that, what are you talking about? Bayley's beloved. Is she? Is she, though? If you're above the age of 7 and you're not a female and you can't put your ponytail to the side, are you a fan of Bayley? I outlined a very, very awesome heel turn for Bayley last week on my show with my co-host, and we outlined how Bayley could turn heel, why we think it could happen, but ultimately decided it's not because WWE doesn't want to take away all the merchandising and also the fact that, hey, oh, all these little girls love her, oh, she's someone to look up to, all this stuff. So, but WWE is about putting smiles on people's faces. That is what Stephanie McMahon recently said in an interview. I forget which magazine it was. I read it. That, you know, first and foremost, you know, we're here to put smiles on people's faces. Come on. Sometimes I think she's just a politician running for office. That's what she. It's like she's prepping for that. It's obnoxious. So WWE certainly likes to make sure that they hold true to that philosophy of their own mission of putting smiles on people's faces, and they ended SummerSlam with a smile on most people's faces, and it's just, all right, I'm going to get off my soapbox. But Bayley retaining make total sense. Ember Moon is not nearly ready. What I was thinking, too, during that match, Ember Moon is, I think she's good in the ring. I like her finish. I think that that match is a little bit clunky, but what we need from Ember is to know, who are you? We've gotten little to no promo time from Ember Moon. Why are you here? You know, beyond the wacky contacts that you wear and the makeup and the you know, why do they call you Ember Moon, the entrance, all of it. You know, she's got the marketability in her look. But why are you here? Tell us what your history is. Or have WWE package something. We've just gotten nothing from Ember Moon. And that's what's missing from the crowd reaction, which there really wasn't any. None. And Toronto was being very generous Toronto's being very generous to some matches and respectable to some that honestly didn't deserve it at times. But, okay, so Bayley retains and she moves on to the next opponent as well. All right, moving down the line to the final women's match of the night that I'm going to discuss, Trish Stratus versus Charlotte. The crowd was pretty into this. They weren't overwhelmingly, you know, going crazy. They weren't losing their minds for Trish, but there was a respect there. There was an understanding there that she's a fellow Canadian. Yes, it's her hometown. I think that absolutely helped. You know, if this is held in, like, you know, Miami, Florida, I don't think the reaction would have been as positive for Trish. That goes for anybody in their hometown, so it's kind of a no-brainer. But this was a match that over-delivered for me, especially given Trish being away for so long. I don't care if it's because they coordinated and practiced their match during the week. I don't care. It came off very well. Some believable near falls, Charlotte kicking out of Stratus faction, the battle back and forth with the figure four and the figure eight, all of it. It was very good. I'm glad that Charlotte didn't try to kill herself doing six moonsaults. That's always good to see. Trish was very coordinated in the ring. She hit some nice Hurricane Ranas. I really, really enjoyed, or at least the bar was set so low for me, that when I saw Trish in the ring doing what she was doing, and the crowd, I think, were in sync with my thoughts because they were chanting, "You still got it." And if you read Trish's lips too, by the way, she said, "Damn right I do." And I don't think that was supposed to be a on-camera moment, but I did see it. And that's, I think, ultimately what the fans were expecting. Not a whole lot. A very Charlotte-dominated match in terms of Charlotte basically carrying the match for Trish. And that's not the case here. Trish held her own. You know, Trish, I think, did a very good job of selling, of her timing, of her spots that didn't, you know, things weren't rushed. They took their time. It was a very well laid out match. There's no other way to put it. It was just solidly laid out. It was a good match. It did exactly what it needed to do, and that is propel Charlotte forward. This had nothing to do with Trish Stratus. Anybody who believed Trish Stratus was going to win that match, you haven't been watching wrestling for too long, because if you're a legend of that status and you're not coming back full time, and when you leave after this match, you're not going to be back for a while, if ever, to compete, you do the favors for the person that is still going to be there. It's just the way it goes. And I believe in that. You're at that point of giving back to the business. You're not trying to take from the business anymore. You're giving back. And that's where Trish lands at this point in her career. I don't know if we'll ever see a one-on-one Trish match again. That could have been her swan song. And if it was, great. I don't think there would have been a better opportunity or a better way to go out than against Charlotte Flair, who held her own, admittedly, too. Trish was in great ring shape. She really, got herself in a phenomenal shape to not blow up and stick with Charlotte every move, punch for punch, slap for slap. Some of the chops she did were brutal and well laid, and just, it's like she just picked up again and like rode a bike, and you never forget, right? It felt like that for Trish, and I got to give her the credit and all the credit in the world. You know, is she better than like Toni Storm or anything? No, she's not. But she's not meant to be. She's not meant to be. This was a attraction match that was here for one purpose, and that's to propel Charlotte Flair forward. Now think of how many times she can brag that she beat Trish Stratus. She made her tap out. That's how you give back to the business. Had Trish won, where do you go from there? Trish leaves and then Charlotte's defined down a peg. For what? Right? So, all right, moving down the line here. Randy Orton and Kofi Kingston, which many people are angry. Boy, people are angry on this one. I disagree. I like it. You know, I understand that SummerSlam is a big pay-per-view. I understand that it's, in many instances, the blow-off of feuds. But Randy and Kofi have just gotten going here. Do you really want a decisive winner with no funky wonky finish? I don't. I certainly don't. I need to see this match continue, because if that's the case, and it clearly is, you need to have this escalate into no holds barred is next, right? No disqualifications, no countouts, to then confining them inside of a cage. Or it could end in Hell in a Cell. That is, now that I'm talking myself into it, probably where these two land is Hell in a Cell. That's my estimation. So, because after the Clash of Champions pay-per-view, guess what's up? So, that's my thought, is that they're doing this in a multi-step, multi-tiered process of having them get disqualified and then going to a no disqualification match, thinking that'll solve it. Maybe do a lumberjack match on Raw or on SmackDown. And then they culminate at Hell in a Cell. Why not? You could really tell a great story here. So that's where I think they're headed. And people are pissed. And it's like, you guys understand this is the first match of their series, right? First match. Let's let this thing breathe. Once in a while, I'm fine with a DQ finish, a count-out finish. That's what they're there for. And that's what a smart booking decision was, although the Canadian crowd would vehemently disagree with me. That was the appropriate finish, one way to do an appropriate finish for this program that is going to continue over the next couple of months, most likely. Okay, and moving down the line here to AJ Styles versus Ricochet. This match, I don't think, stole the show. You could make a case for it. I wouldn't say that it stole the show in the way that many people might have expected, but it certainly was a contender, particularly the ending of the match where Ricochet attempted a Phoenix Splash off the top rope and he was caught midair and it was reversed into a Styles Clash. Just a great way to end it. And afterwards, Style urged the OC to hit the Magic Killer in Ricochet, and they do. Good. Very good match. Very good match. The finish of that match was incredible. Loved it. Loved it. Very good. Very good. Again, I do not expect the OC to lose any tag team gold nor any singles gold anytime soon. They need to be established as a heel group that has all the gold and people are pissed off about it. You have baby faces chasing them. Again, guys, we're getting later into the year. The later in the year we get, as a rule of thumb, the more heel champions you'll see, because that's the story that is best, and it's true, for culminating at WrestleMania or even Rumble, if that's the shorter term goal of seeing a babyface chase down a heel for that championship. And I think that's where we're headed. All right, Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon. Kevin Owens wins. Kevin Owens wins in a match that we saw Elias as a special enforcer and that whole nonsense, which, you know, eventually Kevin Owens takes out Elias and it's just down to Shane and Kevin. And of course it ends in Kevin Owens actually delivering a low blow, because although you could argue it was justified because Elias tried to get him disqualified by throwing a chair in and tempting him to use it on Shane, and Shane doing the same thing, slapping him in the face. So when the referee's back was turned, guess what Kevin Owens does? He pulls a Seth Rollins and kicks Shane below the belt, which honestly I'm totally fine with. I am totally fine with that happening. It was deserved after everything Shane has done. And so I was a fan of it. And I don't, could you have had Kevin Owens lose this and then be that rebel that shows up every week? Yeah, you could. And then eventually management gets so pissed off that what they do is just say, okay, Kevin, you can get your job back, but you have to run the gauntlet. I mean, there's things you could do, but what's the payoff, right? What's the payoff? But I had no problem. Shane got a stunner. The crowd loved it, and we went home. And now Kevin Owens has his, still has his job, and we have a completed, hopefully, storyline of Shane McMahon on television for quite a long time. Pretty please. Okay. Well, guys, that is that's my quick and dirty wrap up of the SummerSlam pay per view. Again, this was a match or a card that I stated was a card that was dangerous because it looked so predictable. And in many ways, it was. But you know what? That's not a bad thing. When it's predictable, but it's the right choice overrides predictability every day of the week. And I was fine with things being predictable if they're the right finish. And I think we got an 80% right finish card here. I had no issue, well, not with anything, but with the majority of things WWE did in terms of who wins the match, who won the matches. Yeah, I think they progressed storylines in a way that was believable. They even discussed the Roman Reigns deal when he interfered in Buddy Murphy's Cruiserweight Championship match and ends up, you know, beating down Buddy Murphy again. And Roma is just a bully at this point. He's just a bully, but we're not going to go there. So, well, guys, don't forget, tomorrow I'll be back with the Raw review, Raw recap, and then Thursday will be my SmackDown Live review, so you're going to want to check me out both of those nights as we head on into the late hours of the night here as I record this show. And again, the shows will be out later, so just because you don't see it before you go to bed doesn't mean it won't be there when you wake up. Because, as you all know, I am 2,000 miles away from my original podcasting studio out there in upstate New York. So bear with me on this little bit of a time differential. I am absolutely exhausted, and but I'm here for you guys. I know you need your wrestling audio, just as I do, to get myself motivated again. Before I go on here, I listen to other shows, other analysis, and I get inspired. I rewatch clips. I mean, I don't take people's ideas because I'm not just a sheep. I generate and formulate my own, but points that are brought up, I can thrive off of and branch off my own ideas from. So that's how I get prepared for these shows, and especially on a night like this when it's an extremely late night. I've been almost up for 24 hours, and it's rough. So with all that being said, all this talk about sleep is making me want to go to sleep. So all right, well, guys, thank you so much for joining me. And again, please check out the website at wwepodcast.com. Support the show by going to the Support the Show tab and clicking on the Amazon banner. If you do any shopping on Amazon, go through there first. It will kick back a little bit to the show. And also go to patreon.com/wwepodcast if you want all of your ad-free listening experiences applied to the WWE Podcast. You'll get them all for seriously a dollar a month. A dollar. Pretty damn good deal. If not, you can continue to listen to this absolutely free audio. It costs nothing for you guys, which is pretty damn cool. And also, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, and any other social media platform that's available, I'm pretty much on. So give me a like, a follow if you have a moment. Check me out on Apple Podcasts, and anywhere that you can find podcasts, you will find this show. We're climbing the ranks pretty quick. I'm appreciative of that. You guys are the reason this show is a success, not because of me. You guys are the listeners. I can't, I can't fo the ratings, right? I can't fo the rankings. I can't do any of that. That's because of you guys that this show is so successful. So I really want to say thank you, a genuine thank you to everybody who listens to this show, regulars and new people. I thank you, and there'll be lots more to come. So alrighty, well, with all that said, I will talk to you next time.